is first up. Every morning, come and hang on first up. The only show that brings the bang. It's first up.
You're listening to First Up on TSN 1050.
This is First Up.
You ain't first, you're last.
What a day it was yesterday in the GTA and the surrounding area all over Ontario. People shoveling their driveways, trying to get to work or wherever they had to go. It was an utter disaster on the roads and everywhere. Almost 38 centimeters. That is the prediction of what ultimately fell. It looks like that's the end of the snow, fortunately, for everyone out there. But, man, it would have been nice to be in Miami last night. That's where the Toronto Raptors were, and I'm sure they're talking to their buddies back home. The Raptors are be like, wow, we really had a road trip at the perfect time. Welcome into First Up, Aaron Korolnik and Carlo Koliakova with you. And, man, Miami looks truly delightful at this time of year. It was a little difficult for the Toronto Raptors, considering their opponent. Miami, definitely one of the best teams in the NBA. They are so deep. I mean, when you're bringing Tyler Hero off the bench, who is going to win Sixth Man of the Year, and what a resurgence that kid is at. He's having an unbelievable year. And Miami was playing without Kyle Lowry last night as well, and he was out for personal reasons against his former team for the first time. It was a tough game for the Raps. They were coming in as four-point dogs, but they really battled all the way till the end, Coco. And you think about the last 10 days or so for the Raps. They played Phoenix at home, took them all the way to the wire, unfortunately losing by four. Then they play the Milwaukee Bucks, beating them on the road in the second half of a back-to-back. And last night against Miami, I would argue those are three legit title contenders, and they acquitted themselves well, unfortunately losing last night. But I was really impressed with the battle that the Raptors put up throughout the entirety of the four quarters.
Look, that's what you have to. That's what we've learned to come to appreciate with this Raptors team is that, you know, they never count themselves out of any matchup. You know, it's almost like they thrive, you know, being the underdogs, and they thrive, you know, and that to play through the adversity that they deal with. And we saw that firsthand last night, where, you know, going into the game, you know, you're a good guy at judging the spreads of the game, and Miami was -3, and it just seemed too low, but clearly, I think the Raptors are getting the respect of Vegas as well, too, because of, you know, the way they play up to their potential and the way they play down to their potential against the weaker teams in the NBA. But, you know, just a surprise thing. And 20 Fingers, can you cue up the clip of Nick Nurse talking about this 6-7-man rotation? Because in a third and game in four nights, you would think that you would stretch out the bench just a little bit more to sort of maximize a little bit more energy late in the game, because literally that's when the Raptors lost it. It was in the fourth quarter where they just looked like they ran out of gas. So let's hear Nick Nurse's explanation as to why.
Well, again, Doug, I think I know that's a lot of minutes for some of those guys, but I felt comfortable. I actually, you know, I thought I had six guys. I wanted them all out there. I kind of wanted to keep Precious out there more in the fourth quarter, but you know, kind of ran Scotty and Chris was having a great game, so let him keep going. I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm looking at the guys we played, if I can fault any of them for the way they played tonight. So I'm not saying I needed to try anybody else.
I mean, the answer is pretty simple, right? I mean, we know what it is. We know that Gary Trent Jr. and Ken Birch were out last night. And we know that Nick Nurse hasn't trusted the other dudes on the bench, nor should he. I mean, Champagne played 9 minutes. And that was it, aside from Chris Boucher. So really, it was six men playing all the minutes for the Toronto Raptors last night. You look at the numbers. I mean, Achiuwa played 36, Van Vliet played 40, Barnes 39, OG 33, Siakam 42, and Boucher 38. So, you know, they're not giving Delano Banton, Malachi Flynn, or our boy Svi Mihailuk, or Utah Watanabe any minutes anymore. Nick Nurse doesn't feel like those guys are able to play at the level commensurate with, especially an opponent like the Miami Heat. I mean, maybe against Dallas on Wednesday or Washington on Friday, maybe those guys can get some minutes. But against Miami, who's a tough, tough team, who they welcomed Bam Adebayo back last night, and man, is he just a super, super defender, that guy. Just, I love watching him play basketball. And again, they were without Kyle Lowry. I love Miami. And if there was a team I'd be looking at
especially if Brooklyn doesn't get Kyrie Irving back, and we can get into his comments.
Well, not just Kyrie Irving. They just lost Durant for six weeks.
Yeah, 4 to 6 weeks. But you imagine Durant will be back before the playoffs. But I like Miami to come out of the East right now. I'm a big fan of that team, and when they're at full operational capacity, they are absolutely nasty. But with regards to the Raps in particular, I think it's a pretty simple equation. It's just not a lot of depth on this roster when you have two of your guys like Birch and Trent Jr. out. And as a result of that, I mean, that's what you get. Six guys in your rotation.
I'm not going to sit here and question Nick Nurse, because I really do trust, you know, his coaching instincts and, you know, his vision of the game and stuff like that. But, you know, we're 41 games into the season, and, you know, in a game where you've got a third game in a back-to-back, you can't find 5, 6, 7 minutes for guys that have played 30-plus games for you, like Watanabe, Banton, Mihailuk, to sort of give some of those other guys a rest in the game to give yourself a better chance to win. And look, I'm not going to question Nick Nurse, because he's a guy that's has a better eye and a better sense of the game, because he's on the floor seeing the energy levels, seeing the fatigue factor. But, you know, when you just sort of dissect the end of the game and the final score, and then you see the way the players were played, you sit there and you question and saying, is there something different you could have done that maybe could have gave one of these players that you do trust a little bit more energy to make a bigger play down the stretch?
Well, it was great to see. No, I mean, listen, you're like, I'm not going to question Nick Nurse, but I'm going to question Nick Nurse. But in any case, listen, I'm with you. I understand what you're trying to say, but listen, Nick Nurse sees these guys every day, and I don't want to see Banton and Mihailuk. I want to see Scotty Barnes playing almost 40 minutes like he did last night. And did you see that dunk that he had on that fast break where he just crowned some dude and then like flew into the front row, beer and booze and water like flying everywhere? And man, what a play that was from Scotty Barnes. And it was great to see him perform the way he did after missing a couple of games with that knee injury. And it looks like he's fully recovered from that. Man, he put on a show with that play in particular. He had 16 points, 8 boards, and 6 assists. He shot the ball 18 times, which I love to see. I want Scotty firing the rock as much as possible. But he's kind of fallen behind a little bit in the Rookie of the Year race. Evan Mobley has taken, I don't know. I'm not going to say taken control. I think it's still probably a 3-horse race between Mobley, Scotty Barnes, and Cade Cunningham of the Detroit Pistons. But Barnes clearly is motivated by the Rookie of the Year conversation, and he discussed that in his comments postgame.
I think that I think it's pretty close. You know, a lot of rookies have just been really hooping this year. They've just been really balling out on their teams, helping their teams out. But I would say it's important to me to just try to, when rookie of the year, to try to start my legacy off right. That's just been a goal of mine, start of the season. I would say it's something that we all should be trying to achieve and win.
I love that. Start my legacy off right. Yeah. Swag from Scotty Barnes. And sure, why shouldn't he try to win Rookie of the Year? And listen, you're going to have to put up some good statistics in order to win Rookie of the Year. And I think maybe the Raptors being a playoff team, which I imagine they will be, assuming all things go according to plan, that will aid Scotty Barnes. But you look at the Cleveland Cavaliers and Evan Mobley. Like the Cavs beat Brooklyn last night. Yeah. I know Durant was out. Kyrie was in, and he played really well last night. But, I mean, the Cavs, like, I believe they have the most wins of any team in the East. Oh, I guess Miami, after last night's win, up to 28. But Cleveland has as many wins as Chicago and Brooklyn and Milwaukee do. Cleveland.
Wow.
Like, LeBron James ain't there anymore.
Yeah,
Kevin Love still is. But Kyrie Irving ain't there anymore. I mean, this is a new generation. Garland. And Garland's been exceptional. He's going to be an all-star, by the way. And I really like what I've seen from Cleveland, but I think I really just kind of – it's going to be a tough battle for Scotty to get back in that race, because just when everyone's fully healthy and the Raptors have their full rotation intact, he's the fourth or fifth option. And in Cleveland, Mobley is just a little bit more impactful, I think.
Well, I mean, I don't know if it'll be that tough, because clearly when he plays – he's a very impactful player. I mean, the unfortunate thing for Scottie Barnes is that his season twice has been impacted by injury just when you feel like he's starting to get into rhythm. I mean, you know, beginning of the year, he set the stage for Raptors fans and came out and actually, took the city by storm by just the way that he sort of came out and established himself and was the early leader for that. And then he has the thumb injury. He misses a couple of games, and then he has to find his way back into the rotation and find his rhythm back. And that took a little bit. And then once he did, he's out with the knee injury now. And then he comes back. He looks really good again. He sort of makes his mark, and you just hope he can find that level of consistency. And I really like what he said to finish his quote, saying that that's the rookie of the year is obviously a goal of his, and it's something we as a team should be trying to achieve. Yeah, and this is what this Raptors team prides itself. You go back to Kyle Lowry when he was here, he was always talking about other guys on the team getting their paydays, right? And so that's what you want this Raptors team. Yes, you want them to be a playoff team. You want them to be as competitive as they could potentially be. And you just got to look at their last stretch of games where they played the Suns, they played the Bucks, and they played the Miami Heat. I mean, they won one of those three games, but they could have easily won all three. And if anything, they were very competitive in all three. Mm-hmm. And those are against the top dogs in the NBA. So you got to like what you see with the fight of this Raptors team. They just need some level of consistency. And I wouldn't even say level of consistency with their play. It's more a level of consistency with the people they have in their lineup with injuries or man games, however you want to identify it. Because, you know, if they could just make a tweak, maybe add something different that can give them a little bit more trust on the bench for Nick Nurse, so you're not wearing guys out in a third game in four nights and going with a 6-7-man rotation, maybe you can find a way to muster up 5 or 6 or more of those wins that were losses for you up until this stretch. But, look, a lot to like. We hit the halfway point of the season yesterday. The Raptors finished it one game over 500 at 21-20, and I think you have to, you know, really be pleased that they've at least exceeded expectations coming into this season, knowing that there was so many question marks going into this year.
Absolutely. A really strong first half for the Raps, and a really strong performance again from Pascal Siakam last night. 18 points, 6 boards, 10 assists, and 5 steals. A very impressive stat line for Siakam, and the assists, he's just been pouring them on lately. I am shocked to see the way he's been able to develop his passing, and it's been extremely impressive over the last 20, 25 games or so. And I'd have to check the stats, but my guess, he'd be well over 5 assists a game, a number he has not even approached before in his NBA career. So clearly, Siakam developing different aspects of his game as his career continues to grow and alter. And that's a very positive sign for the Raps as they enter the second half of the season in Dallas tomorrow night. Tomorrow is Wednesday, right? Yeah, it is indeed. That'll be a fun game. Luka, I always love watching Luka. Really fun matchup for the Raps. You imagine guys like OG and Scottie Barnes and Siakam will have their hands full with Luka Doncic. On the other side, I will be ranking our top 5 quarterbacks, the trust level we have in them. Who do you trust the most from 1 to 5, I guess from 5 to 1 in the NFL playoffs? The quarterbacks who remain, we debate it next on First Up. This song is one that represents just so much joy for all of us. Welcome back to First Up, Karol Nikoliakova. We are ranking our top 5 quarterbacks who remain in the NFL playoffs that we trust the most. That we trust the most from 5 to 1. And I have a feeling this may become quite contentious. And we begin with you, my friend.
No, oh, you want me to go first?
Yes. All right, you want me to go first? All right, perfect. All right, so number 5. And I think there's probably 6 quarterbacks you could realistically pick from when it comes to those who remain in the NFL playoffs. My number 5 quarterback is Joe Burrow. And Peter King from NBC pointed this out yesterday. Joe Burrow's passer rating in his last 5 games is 129.9. The highest passer rating ever by Joe Montana in a 5-game stretch is 128.1. Joe Burrow is playing at an exceptionally high level, and he's got Ja'Marr Chase, he's got T. Higgins, he's got Tyler Boyd, and he's got a damn good shot of upsetting the Tennessee Titans in round two. Joe Burrow at number five for me. At number four, I have Josh Allen. And that is not an indictment on Josh Allen at all. It's purely representative of the remarkable depth and talent and class of the remaining quarterbacks in the playoffs. We know what Josh Allen could do. He's an unbelievable quarterback. He's one of the top four quarterbacks in the NFL. Unfortunately for him, the other three remain in the NFL playoffs. At number three, I have Patrick Mahomes. And you may be wondering, you have Mahomes behind Brady and Rodgers? Yes, I do. And I think it's a realistic thing to say that Mahomes has, I'm not going to say regressed, but has not performed according to his consistent abilities throughout the course of this season. I don't think he's had his best year. He's had a lot of ups and downs. The turnovers are at a career high. And yes, he's been better in the second half, and he was exceptional last week. But I think as far as the trust I have, I'm going with Aaron Rodgers ahead of him at number two. Listen, the last interception Aaron Rodgers threw was in week 10. Since then, he's thrown 20 touchdowns and zero picks. This guy is
the
dialed
magic
in.
Of the broken toe.
Exactly. Listen, if you fracture your toe, you don't throw any interceptions. That's just how it works. And at number one, I have Tom Brady. So I don't really need to elaborate on that. Of course, Tom Brady is number one. That goes without saying. Coco, do you want to go, or do we want to let a Rod go first, and we'll have you reveal yours in the final?
Sure, but I think the consensus number one here is Tom Brady.
I mean,
as long as he's playing, there's nobody that can ever be ranked over him. So
it would
ahead.
Be hard to take someone over Tom Brady, and maybe you can make the argument that his weapons are inferior to...
Doesn't matter.
I don't think it matters either. All right, let's have a Rod give his top five. Go ahead, buddy.
Very similar to yours, number five. I do have Joe Burrow. I do feel confident on his game. I feel confident with the play calling he gets from a very pass-happy guy in Zach Taylor, and he has great weapons. One number that really catches my eye, yards per completion, 12.6 for Joe Burrow. That's a pretty high number, you know, in today's modern short passing game in the NFL, which means, again, he throws the ball, and he throws the ball to his wide receivers a lot, which gives me a lot of confidence in this man's ability. He's done nothing but win his whole career, high school, college. We won't talk about last year and this year. So to me, he's number five. Number four, Josh Allen. To me, again, so far, what's left in the playoffs, the best dual threat QB. He can make the play with his legs. He can make the play with his arm. A lot of confidence in Josh Allen going forward. Where me and AK's list differ is right here. Number three, I have Rodgers instead of Mahomes. I'm not confident in his weapons after Devontae Adams. I'm not too confident about the fact that his defense can get him on the field often enough for him to be as impactful as he wants to be. So that's why he's number three. Number two for me is Mahomes. I rarely changed, you know, my mind based on one game, but what he did to that Steelers defense, what he did to that great pass rush, it bumped him up for me. He looked like vintage Mahomes there, you know, getting out of the pocket, making plays, throwing across his body. Good stuff from Mahomes there. Pretty dangerous if you're Buffalo, if you ask me. And number one, Tom Brady. How can you not trust Tom Brady in the playoffs?
Yeah. You don't need to elaborate.
Why he's the best.
It's just Brady, right? All right, Coco, lay it on us. I think everyone's excited and interested where you'll have Josh Allen ranked here. Who is your top five? Interesting to know that neither Arad or I had Matthew Stafford in our top fives. Do you, Carlo?
I don't. And I'm going to throw a little bit of a wild card here in my top five. And starting with number five, I'm going to go with the guy that everybody loves to criticize, and that's Jimmy Garoppolo. Because if there's one thing that this guy was very good at doing before landing in San Francisco, that was winning football games. And the last time he started for the San Francisco 49ers, he took them all the way to the Super Bowl. And if it wasn't for his brain-dead mistake in the fourth quarter, I wouldn't even say it was his fault. It was Kyle Shanahan buckling under the pressure because he decided to throw the ball instead of run the ball late in the fourth quarter. Maybe we're talking about the San Francisco 49ers as Super Bowl champs instead of the Kansas City Chiefs. And we saw what he did against the Dallas Cowboys. He's a guy that can run an efficient offense, given the fact that he doesn't turn the ball over. So when you talk about a guy that I can trust, is a guy that trusts his defense and has to trust the weapons around him in order for them to have success. And we just touched on it early on. You give a team a second life into the playoffs, you just never know how far they can take that. And I'm not saying that San Fran is going to be the team that runs over Green Bay, but I would not be surprised if San Fran is the team that shocks the world throughout this whole playoffs, because they have a really good balanced team both on offense and on defense. So Jimmy G is my number five, even though you can't go wrong with Burrow and all those stats that you just mentioned. My number four, Patrick Mahomes, because all the credit you want to give him for being as great as he is, let's be honest, he's had his worst statistical year this year. And why? Because teams have figured him out, especially in the passing game. Granted, their running game has given them a lot more success lately, taking the pressure off of Mahomes. But he's always, this year, you've seen so many bonehead plays by him. And especially when the pressure is on, especially against a team like the Buffalo Bills, who have improved their pass rush, and going back to the last time they played him, can he be a guy you can trust to make the right play instead of the pretty play when it counts the most? My number three, I'm going with my boy, Josh Allen. And why? Because you talk about the dual threat he represents. Not only can he beat you with his arm, he can beat you with his legs. And we've seen an example of that, especially against a top five defense like the New England Patriots. He has gotten better throughout the whole season with game after game after game, showing why he was second in MVP voting in last season. And if you're coming off a performance like that against a Bill Belichick defense where you went seven possessions and scored seven touchdowns, this is a guy I can definitely trust in the big moment. My number two are exactly like you guys. Aaron Rodgers, number two, just because he is Mr. Clutch. When you need a big play, he finds a way to make it happen. You talked about the last time he threw an interception. I mean, it must have been because of the broken toe or all the chip on the shoulder that he's playing in right now for everybody calling him out, including media members who say he won't get their vote for the MVP. And this is a guy that backed up his MVP season, so you got to trust what he did in the season and what he hopes to do in the playoffs. But tough matchup against the San Francisco 49ers. And number one, it's the GOAT. The greatest of all time we're watching still play football. It's Tom Brady.
Listen, I appreciate you being contrarian and listing Jimmy G on the list, but let's be honest here. There is no chance in hell you would rather have Jimmy G under center than Joe Burrow or Matthew Stafford.
You're right.
You're
right. I'm not going to disagree with that. I'm just going by statistics.
Well, if you're going by statistics, that's still not the case. I mean, certainly not the case, even more so than... Listen, I understand Jimmy G's record as a starter. I think it's like 35-16 or something like that. He's been very successful as a winning quarterback. But let's not attribute that solely to Jimmy Garoppolo. I mean, I think we all would recognize that the success or failure of the Cincinnati Bengals is wholly attributed to Joe Burrow and that arc. 100%. Mm-hmm. He's been so good down the stretch.
You could say the same thing about the 49ers, though. Like, when they haven't played with Jimmy G, are they able to trust Trey Lance?
No. Well, no, I don't think Trey Lance is trustworthy at this point in his career. But listen, look at last week. 16 of 25 for a Bills 72 at a pick for Jimmy G against Dallas. He had nothing to do with their win. In fact, you look at that interception he threw and that quarterback sneak where he was premature in running it and screwed over his team, almost costing them the game. And Kyle Shanahan addressed that after the game, blaming Garoppolo outwardly. Listen, I think personally, I think Garoppolo is a clear number seven, maybe even number eight with the team.
That's why I said wild card.
Remaining.
That's why I said wild card.
What do you mean wild card?
I said he was my wild card pick as number five.
Oh, I know. Listen, we're just talking like here. I think you could probably make an argument that I'd rather you grab. Rather have Ryan Tannehill than Jimmy Garoppolo.
Stafford.
I would much rather have Stafford. Much rather have Burrow, and probably even rather have Tannehill. If you look at Tannehill's stats, when both of Julio and AJ Brown are in the lineup, and Derrick Henry, the three of them, nasty over the last two seasons. Or I guess Julio wasn't on the team last year, but AJ Brown and Derrick Henry together, that play action game that Tennessee has rocking. Is going to be very dangerous, and I think that's something that Cincy is going to certainly have to account for as they get ready to visit the Tennessee Titans in a game that will lead off Saturday afternoon's NFL action. All right, well, that's how we ranked them. All right, why don't you tweet out our rankings? We'll get people to rank our rankings, and I don't think it's the Jimmy G ranking at number five is going to be well-received by our audience.
I love it. Stir the pot.
You should have put Josh Allen at one. Cowardly move not doing that.
I can't put Josh Allen ahead of Tom Brady.
Why not? Dude, he just had, like, he was just, they just had a perfect football game. Why not?
You're right, but I'm also a realist.
A real man would have done that. A real Bills fan. You know who would have done that? Jack Armstrong. He's probably a real Bills fan.
He'd probably do the same thing I did.
I'd be curious. Well, you know, maybe we'll ask Charlie Back his quarterback rankings and Robin Lundberg when he joins us at 8:30.
Sure. I just want to point this out. I had a really diehard Bills fan reach out to me over the weekend right before the Bills and Patriots. And obviously we're talking and you know, getting our own feelings of the game. And we both felt the same way. We both felt that, you know, the Bills, they should have had no problem winning this game. And the only thing that would make them lose was if the weather was going to play an impact in the game. And clearly the weather didn't play as much of an impact as most people hyped it up to be, because the Bills just couldn't be stopped. The better team offensively, the better team defensively, steamrolling through the Patriots. And somebody pointed this out to me, saying that, you know, all the criticism that the Bills faced this year has given Buffalo Bills players more reason to believe in what is, quoted as the revenge tour to the Super Bowl. And hear me out, okay? Revenge game number one. You beat the crap out of your most hated rival and a team that has humiliated you for the last 20 years, the New England Patriots. You go into Arrowhead and you get your revenge game on the AFC Championship game from last season with the Kansas City Chiefs. You go into Tennessee and you get your revenge game from the Music City Miracle that was back in, what year was it, 2005? I don't remember the year. And then you go into the Super Bowl and get your revenge on the 0-4 Super Bowl record that you currently have against your most hated nemesis, Tom Brady. Could you imagine if that plays out?
I mean, Bills Bucks would be just an unbelievable matchup.
Could you imagine if that revenge tour actually... Well, it plays out.
It's almost hard to like think of a bad matchup, right? I mean, we're assuming one of Buffalo or KC will be in the Super Bowl, right? And then you're probably looking at the other side, probably one of Green Bay or Tampa will be in the Super Bowl. So, I mean, just the NFL playoffs, they've done it right. A fantastic job.
Your favorite word, revenge.
Revenge narrative. indeed. Well, Kyle Lowry didn't show up for the revenge game yesterday. He was out for personal reasons. But the Raps ultimately falling to the Miami Heat. We'll be joined by Javon Shepard, who is a color analyst for us here at TSN 1050 covering the Raps. He'll join us at 9:30. Again, Charlie Batch, longtime NFL quarterback, will join us at 9:10. Robin Lundberg from Sports Illustrated at 8:30, one of my favorite guests when we're fortunate enough to be able to have him. But coming up in just 10 minutes' time, it is Chris Johnson, our TSN Hockey Insider. Lots of talk yesterday, Coco, about Jake Muzzin, how he's kind of maybe regressed a little bit, hasn't had the best of seasons. Of course, injuries and COVID playing a major factor in that. But how concerned should the Leafs be about his performance, and should they be trying to find him a new partner leading up to the trade deadline? Those questions and more with Chris Johnson, our Hockey Insider, as First Up rolls on. This is TSN 1050.
Snowmageddon just didn't affect the average person like you or I, Carlo. It affected the Toronto Maple Leafs yesterday. You had practice, probably, where would that be? Lakeshore Lions Arena in Etobicoke or whatever it's called?
No, the Ford Performance Center, man.
Ford Performance Center. Steve, it's been so long since I've been outside.
I think it's still called the Ford Performance Center. I mean, it could be called something different.
What is Lakeshore Lions? What's that from?
That's their old arena, man.
That's
back
their
when
old
I
arena. Okay. See, look, I'm an old man. I can't.
It's literally
track.
Right next door, but, you know, it was their old stomping grounds back when I played.
So they obviously had some issues getting to practice yesterday, of course, with the snow and everything that surrounded that. So let's hear from a couple of the boys. Alex Kerfoot, who I believe lives downtown, pretty close to me. I see him around quite a bit. Here's his story detailing how he was able to get to practice yesterday.
It was a bit of an adventure. Got here a little bit late. Obviously, I haven't seen the roads that bad since I've been here. And I got a little car that doesn't handle the snow too well, so tried to make it out, didn't go too well, and then had to Uber here.
Yikes.
Uber, man, being an Uber driver yesterday.
How was Uber operating yesterday?
Very lucrative. I don't know. You must be driving like a monster truck.
Were they driving F-150. Pickup trucks or snowplows?
You must be.
Imagine you go to the Uber app and there's a snowplow there, like one of those big truck snowplows, and you're like, yep, can you come pick me up and plow my way through the city?
That could have been the case for Alex Kerfoot. But John Tavares addressed the same question, and his social media was popping off yesterday, shoveling with his kid. It was
a very wholesome
afternoon for Tavares before practice. And here's his story about getting to practice.
Took over an hour just to plow through the driveway. So lucky enough, I got a truck. So definitely helped guys sporadic hell over today. But good got everybody here. I think roads have to get picked up, but we found a way. So not your typical morning, but nice to see some snow on the ground.
I'm surprised it's they found nice a way to get everybody there because...
Me too.
I mean, at 9 o'clock in the morning, that's when all the traffic jams were happening on all the major highways and stuff like that. And if the highways weren't plowed, how were the side streets plowed?
I have no idea. I'm actually shocked that they all got to practice.
Right.
Joe Keefe explained that some guys were late, some guys... came at different times.
Well, that's just one of those days where you throw an optional skate and say whoever's here is here, right?
Seriously, like I don't understand why he made them all come in. They should have been look outside, be like, all right, boys, no worries.
It should have been a message in the morning saying, boys, no pressure. It's open if you want to come in, but do yourselves a favor, stay home.
Yeah,
get a workout in at home if you can. But clearly that didn't affect Nylander. I mean, this guy is clearly stuck in. Summer weather still, wearing sandals to the rink.
I respect it immensely. Who wants to put on shoes? Who wants to put on shoes? William Nylander knows.
Dude, I'm telling you, man, I've shared this with you. I've got these Timberland boots. They are the most comfortable things that I put on my feet. And I actually look forward to putting them on every day during the winter.
Send me a link. I need to purchase some boots.
You won't go wrong, man.
Timberland
boots. Yes.
At Timberland. At TaylorMade. At Timberland. Our two favorite companies. And Danimation. We'll be joined by Chris Johnston, our TSN Hockey Insider, on the other side. We'll talk about Jake Muzzin, some of the comments made by not only Muzzin, but his coach Sheldon Keefe about his performance this year. And could the Leafs be in the mix for one pending UFA who is most certainly on the market? Dallas Stars defenseman John Klingberg. We'll ask CJ when he joins us next on First Up.
This is Leafs Breakfast.
It's the day after Snowmageddon here in Toronto, and we welcome you back to First Up. This is Leafs Breakfast. Aaron Karolnik and Carlo Koliakovo with you. The Leafs did skate yesterday. They weathered the storm and made their way to practice very impressively. That really shows the dedication of the Toronto Maple Leafs to winning hockey games. And we welcome a man who shows dedication to TSN and to us by joining us every Tuesday morning. It is our good friend Chris Johnston. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Still haven't left the house since the snow started, so.
Well, I was going to ask because, you know, well, we're both condo dwellers. You know, there's really no reason to leave when that, you know, the nonsense that's going outside is going on if you're a condo person, right?
I'm with you on that. And... you know, I'm just looking around. I watched some of the TV yesterday, like the local news, and it looked like chaos out there. So I hope the roads get better, but I'm hunkered down and just watching hockey.
How are your emotions today? I know you had yesterday to reflect, but a tough day on Sunday for you and your buddy and our buddy, Pierre LeBrun, who basically locked himself in his cottage on Sunday after a Cowboys loss.
Yeah, I'm still in denial. You know, I haven't approached processing just another season that ends in very predictable fashion. If you followed the Cowboys the last 20 years, give or take, that was a crappy Sunday, honestly. But I'm behind your Bills now. If I'm gonna, I'm not saying I'm a fan, but I would love to see Buffalo do well if the Cowboys aren't in it anymore. So I hope the Bills go and win a Super Bowl. That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, no, it'd be pretty cool for sure. We'll see how it all plays out. They've got a big.
I've never seen Carlo smile more than at this very moment.
No,
CJ.
Man, look,
your support means the world to him.
I said it yesterday. I'm done talking about the Bills. I'm just going to let the game happen on Saturday because I had my glory Saturday night with that shellacking that they gave the
the Patriots,
and now I move on.
You forgot.
I let the week play out. You know, don't get too far ahead of myself. Well, speaking of getting too far ahead of themselves, were you surprised that the Maple Leafs actually practiced yesterday?
A little bit, but, you know, they're pretty focused. Like, obviously every team takes things seriously, but if you remember when they were out in Western Canada just before Christmas time and they had a game canceled in Calgary and then the game in Vancouver and Seattle both got postponed, like, they practiced every day during that. And I remember I was asking someone with the team, like, what they're doing, and, like, they just said they don't want to miss a day. And, you know, Sheldon Keith made a comment, you know, to reporters yesterday about how they feel they should win the division. Like, I think that it's a little bit of a reflection just, I guess, of how much is riding on this season. You know, how much the disappointment of last year sort of carries with them. And so, yeah, I didn't think they would practice just when I woke up and looked outside and saw the snow. But, you know, reflecting on it, I understand that I do think it's part of the organization's approach right now that they don't really, I think that they mean business, even though it's such a strange year. They only played 36 games. It feels like they barely play, just with all the postponements and everything that's gone on. But, you know, I think that they're on a bit of a mission, and that's a day where you kind of see that attitude shine through.
It's hard to pick nits with a team that's had as much success as the Maple Leafs have had so far this year, Chris, but Jake Muzzin hasn't had his best season. I think we would all agree. I think he would agree, and certainly Sheldon Keefe would agree, and there's a number of reasons that you could attribute that to. Certainly the COVID injuries, kind of the inconsistent nature of being in and out of the lineup, also a number of defense partners he's had throughout the season. But when you think about the priorities for the Toronto Maple Leafs leading up to the trade deadline, where I imagine they'll be very interested in acquiring a defenseman, how important do you think finding a consistent partner for him would be on their list of priorities? He's been with Liljegren, he's been with Hall. What do you make of Muzzin and his partner so far, and what do you think will transpire leading up to the deadline?
Well, I think if it's like your wish list, that's sort of the perfect, you know, ideal scenario. The problem I see is I don't really see an obvious candidate that either shoots right or plays the right side that is available that, you know, would fit with Muzzin to be acquired. And so, you know, it's not to say that won't end up being the case, but, you know, I have a feeling that as this plays out, they might have to adjust that a little bit. But I think that, you know, rounding out their top four of their blue line, you know, would be ideal. You know, they have three left-hand shots, you know, in Muzzin, Brody, who plays the right side, and Riley. You know, it'd be nice to have that fourth. And, you know, I think that there's at least some question whether Justin Hall is, you know, ideally suited to be in that position. You know, I know they've liked his game a little bit better of late, prior to him, you know, exiting the lineup again. But, you know, it might be a little bit too much to ask is kind of my feeling, just given their cap situation and the players we know to be available. But certainly I think that you'll see some kind of reshaping of that blue line, you know, before March 21st. You know, maybe it's a defenseman going out for another one coming in. You know, I don't know exactly how it's going to unfold, but, you know, I'd be surprised if the group that's there today is the exact group to carry into the playoffs, because I do think that's probably their area of need, is trying to solidify that. Especially because the Muzzin pair is so important in a playoff series, right? I mean, in the past, that's who Sheldon Keefe has put up against the other team's best players. You know, when the matchup game gets more important in the playoffs, you know, he's vitally important for the team. And so I guess the first step is to try to do everything they can to get him up to speed, playing his best, and then, you know, see what they can do around him in terms of, you know, finding a partner that, you know, can is maybe a little better suited to play with him in those tough minutes.
CJ, your colleague, Pierre LeBrun, wrote an article in The Athletic yesterday basically identifying what the rental market would look like on defense. And the name that stands out on top of that is John Klingberg. And I'm actually still can't believe that Dallas isn't finding a way to get this guy signed, considering the value he's brought to this, to that group, you know, during his tenure there. But hey, you know, those are their own problems. But the list includes, you know, Ben Sherratt, Colin Miller, Josh Manson, Giordano, Nick Leddy, Ristolainen, Justin Braun. Do you think those are some of the names maybe the Maple Leafs could find themselves attached to, or is it going to be a name that probably that no one's really expecting?
No, well, I think probably if they had their druthers, they'd like to get someone who isn't necessarily a rental player, but you know, the way they, when they got Jake Muzzin, they got him for two playoff runs before they had to extend him. You know, that might be a better fit. You know, the rental market, as we saw, I mean, that was what the Leafs shopped in last year. They gave up a lot of assets to bring in guys like Nick Foligno. And, you know, Nick got injured and didn't get a chance really to make the impact the Leafs would have hoped. And you know, they did give up a first-round pick plus a third for him. And so, you know, I think that if those are definitely some of the names that they would be picking through, and those are the players on the rental market. Those will be guys that are likely moved in advance of March 21st. You know, the Klingberg situation is unique. I don't see him being as much a fit for the Leafs just because he's such an offensive-minded player, and you've already got Morgan Rielly to play on your top power play unit. It reminds me a bit of when they got Tyson Barry. It was never quite the right fit because, you know, there was an overlap in what he does best and what Morgan does. But, you know, it seems like in Dallas, you know, part of the thing is that they got him on such good value at $4.5 million for the last 7 years that they basically bought his prime years sort of below what his market would have been. Now I think they're reluctant to pay him the market value because they're worried about decline, you know, just with his age and you know, even somewhat his performance. I know last season wasn't great for Klingberg compared to previous, and this year has kind of been so-so. And so, yeah, you know, it does sound as though he's going to be moved, but, you know, I don't think he's a player that's going to find himself here in Toronto when it's all said and done.
No, it sounds like Carolina and Tampa and Boston looking at Klingberg, and Carolina seems to me, because there were reports, CJ, that Carolina had talked about Klingberg back in November with Dallas, and man, you look at that team. You had Klingberg, and it's a defense that's missing Dougie Hamilton, obviously, from last year, but you slide Klingberg in there. Carolina is a team to be reckoned with. We know that. We know they're a legit cup contender, but when you talk about the top contenders for Klingberg services, kind of how would you rank them, maybe 3-1?
Well, Carolina makes the most sense, I think, just because they have the ability to make that move. They're an aggressive team. I think that their front office is in a mindset right now of wanting to, you know, add to the group they have, which is, you know, among the best teams in the league already. And so, you know, I could see that fit making, you know, a ton of sense for them. You know, he's not, you know, John Klingberg at this stage of his career isn't performing at the same level that Dougie Hamilton did, but, you know, he does a lot of the same things well. And so, you know, I would definitely put them as the front runner here. You know, maybe someone's lurking in the weeds, though. You know, a team that, you know, is looking to make this trade and sign him. You know, someone who isn't necessarily making the deal to try to load up to have the best chance to win the Stanley Cup in the next few months. You know, because it is a bit of an unusual circumstance. We live in strange times, but, you know, if this goes down, it'll probably be one of the bigger trades we see leading up to the deadline, just because of how good John Klingberg's been the last number of seasons.
Our guest is TSN hockey insider Chris Johnston, and I'm curious of your thoughts on the Carey Price situation. There was a report yesterday from the Canadians themselves saying that he is restarting his knee rehab. He remains out indefinitely. So the trade deadline, what, just over 2 months away? I guess a question twofold. Number one, do you think Carey Price plays this season, considering everything that he's endured with injury and his own mental health issues? And two, if he does get back in time for the deadline, do you think Montreal at least explores the option of moving him?
I think they will explore the option of moving him, whether it's before this deadline or maybe in the offseason. You know, Carey Price has a no-move clause, so nothing would happen that he isn't comfortable with. But, you know, the Canadians have 7 wins right now in 37 games. And, oof, you know, it's pretty clear to me, you know, they haven't finished rounding out their front office. But once they do, I think it'll be rather apparent that they're going to go in something approaching a rebuild route, or, you know, it's not going to get better right away is the point. And, you know, where Carey's at in his career, I think they'll probably have to have a similar conversation with guys like Jeff Petrie, maybe even Brendan Gallagher, who just signed a long-term deal fairly recently to see if they want to still be a part of it. And so, you know, it's not clear I don't have any information to know if Price will play this year. I mean, the situation has been pretty touchy. And I think everyone's wanted to give him a space for obvious reasons. And so I'm not sure if he'll be back this season, but I do think whenever he is back and playing or in a position where he's completely healthy, the Canadians will explore the trade market and see if something fits. You know, they'll obviously have to eat a big part of that contract, I would think, to make that kind of move at this stage. But, you know, there will definitely be teams out there that would be interested in him, even after everything he's been through and this long layoff that he will endure. You know, I think that he would be a movable asset. It's just about if the right team that Carey Price is willing to sign off on is you know, steps up and tries to make that trade.
Well, maybe the price is right in Montreal, because yesterday, while you're at home, you probably locked yourself into the 4 o'clock slot between the Wright Bowl, Montreal Canadiens, and Arizona Coyotes, where Arizona beat Montreal, and now Montreal slides into the last slot. But like, why do people still call this like the battle of last place, when at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter if you finish last, you still kind of go through a lottery selection?
Yeah, the league's made changes the last couple of years that make finishing last, you know, a little bit less appealing. Like, even when the Leafs were the last place team in 2015-16, I don't remember the exact numbers they had of getting Auston Matthews, but it was stacked more in their favor, much more in their favor than it will be for, you know, whichever team ends up finishing 32nd this year in that draft lottery. And so, you know, I guess it's something for fans to focus on in those markets. I mean, Montreal was playing in the Stanley Cup final 8 months ago. It's hard to imagine. And now, you know, midway point in the season almost, and they're last in the league. You know, that's a big turn for a fan base. So, you know, let's forget looking at things cold and calculated. If you're emotional, you got to have something to grasp onto. And, you know, the draft's going to be in Montreal in July. I mean, what better way to have host a draft?
No kidding.
Than potentially having the number one overall pick. I mean, that's one way to flush a terrible season for your fan base, is to do that. You know, the Canadians also have stockpiled a few other draft picks. I think that they're going to want to, you know, be you know, pretty active at that draft. I mean, and let's face it, I think they'll try to make some trades leading up to the deadline and have more futures in play. And so, you know, this could go from, you know, what's still going to be a tough couple months, because they've got a lot of games to play, the Canadians, but, you know, they're going to be hoping to switch the narrative and the feel around their team as soon as July, when they host that draft, and, you know, maybe add a player like Shane Wright to their prospect pool.
Wouldn't that be something? And the Shane Wright jerseys would fly off the shelves in Montreal if that were to ever transpire. CJ, thank you so much for doing this. Are you going to venture outside at some point this afternoon?
No commitment. I'm supposed to be in for IT tonight. maybe by 5 o'clock I'll be outside, but before then, no guarantees.
And you're going to Vegas. So you're still going to Vegas for the All-Star game? Is that still happening?
Absolutely. We're keeping that in the universe, bud. Got my ticket ready to go.
Man, you must be so pumped to get out of here. I can only imagine. Just every morning, okay, X number of hours remaining until we
count the days. Can I go to sleep and wake up like 2 weeks from now?
Can I come in your luggage, please?
I am absolutely ready right now. I would go right now.
Yes. Good for you, man.
Well, thank you as always for taking the time for us, and you have yourself a good afternoon. Get out there. Get some fresh air.
All right, boys. Be well.
All right. See you, Chris Johnston, our TSN hockey insider. And yes, insider trading tonight. Always love a good Tuesday evening insider trading.
Oh, we need something, because
we do.
The Leafs haven't played. They've played like two games in like 14 days. It's like, uncle already, man. Like, let's go. Let's get playing. Like, let's get these games rolling. Let's give us some content.
Yeah, exactly. The Leafs do play the Rangers tomorrow night. That should be a good game. The fifth game of their road trip, fifth of six. They will take on the Islanders, I think, the next night. I think it's a Wednesday, Thursday. And then they're back at home, we think, on the 26th of January against the Anaheim Ducks. Will there be fans? Is that right? I don't know if I have the schedule right. Someone's going to have to correct
me. No, you don't. So they play tomorrow at New York, and then they have Thursday, Friday off, and play Saturday on Long Island. Oh, and then don't play again until Wednesday again.
And that's the game against Anaheim.
Anaheim. Okay. What's going on here?
I was close. I don't, dude. They're going to have like 100 games in the month of February.
I know. It's crazy. It's like you play a game. Like, this is a country club type of schedule for the Leafs, man. Play a game, get a couple of days off, play a game, get a couple days off. It's just been, and then you get hit with a 40 centimeter snowfall.
Exactly. It's not going to last forever. I can guarantee you they're looking at it right now. Be like, all right, boys, get your rest now because the grind of February and March is coming your way soon. And the Leafs haven't played like the fewest games in the NHL, but they are on the lower end of the spectrum for sure. And
good thing they banked all those points, man.
Well, that's exactly it. So you can look at it that way or you can look at it the other way. It's one of those things where there's no right or wrong answer if it's good or bad for this team going forward. And I think Sheldon Keefe at least intimated yesterday when he was doing his media availability, this could be good. This adversity, keeping the team sharp and playing a lot of games down the stretch could help them keep their motivation and their focus as they approach the second half of the season coming up a little bit later this week. We'll talk about Timo Meier. 5 goals yesterday. What was the biggest goal-scoring performance you've seen in your 14 years in the NHL? Who was it? I did see that Johan Franzen, one of your former teammates in Detroit,
yeah,
did score 5 goals in a game, one of 5 players to do so in
what
the last
year was
25
that?
Years. We'll look it up. We'll look it up. We'll get the information. I don't know if you were – I think you would probably remember if you were on that team.
I don't remember being in a game where anybody scored 5 goals, but I've been in a game where a lot of guys have scored 4 goals.
A lot of guys. All right. So we'll get some stories on that. We'll look back on the Raptors' tough loss to Miami down in South Beach. A beautiful evening in Miami, apparently, last night. No surprise there. No Kyle Lowry, no problem for the Miami Heat. And Robin Lundberg from Sports Illustrated will join us in about 25 minutes. The third hour, first up, on the way next. You're listening to TSN 1050.